Reading from the Jivadharma, chapter 18. Om Gyanatimandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksurmutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Prakashindo Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, we're reading Jivadharma, and we're up to the part about the spiritual journey of Rajanath. And most of the rest of the book will deal with his progressive education in Krishna consciousness through his Guru Maharaj, Babaji Maharaj. And I guess also within the story, we face the challenges as he has a spirit of renunciation and his family doesn't have the same faith he has. In fact, some members of his family are opposing him. So, anyway, but despite the obstacles, he's continuing with his education. And his guru is educating him through a doctrine called Dashamula, where there are 10 root instructions of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. 8 deal with sambandhagyan, basically, metaphysical knowledge and epistemology means a conception of reality and the means of evidence to support your claim. And all philosophies have these divisions. Abhideya again, that's the 9th verse. What is your means of realizing reality? The 10th verse is Pyojana. What is the goal? What is the result of doing so? So, he was actually his relatives, and especially his cousin, even physically were trying to prevent him from seeing his Guru Maharaj, to the extent that he had to enlist the service of one of his friends who was actually a martial artist. And eventually his cousin died of a snake bite. And there was some question of whether it was just the reaction to the offense of a Vaishnava or just his particular destiny. They probably were combined. So now he's continuing his education, and he wants to know what is the name of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, and should be considered a madhva. And this is going to explain that, the philosophical aspect of the Vedas has been expressed in a book of 4 chapters called the Brahma Sutras or the Vedanta Sutras. And every school of thought tries to justify their teachings based on the Vedanta Sutra. So, In relationship to that question by Vrijanath, he quotes the eighth shloka, the eighth shloka of the Dasamula, which says that the entire spiritual material creation is a manifestation of Sri Krishna's Shakti. The impersonal philosophy illusion is false. And that's going to be explained, the called Vivartavad, which is ultimately Advaita Vedanta. They don't believe, they believe that everything must be an illusion, because if things are emanating from Brahman, then Brahman has been transformed, and therefore that must be illusion. And the continues the Dasamula that it's an impurity that has been produced by Kali Yuga and is contrary to the teaching of the Vedas. It's also going to be discussed that the correct conception of Parinamvad, Parinamvad means that God has energies, and the transformation that happens by God's inconceivable potencies is through his energies and not through him. Brahman, or the absolute reality, does not change. Just like a touchstone may touch something, it has power to transform something, but it doesn't itself become transformed by that. The Vedas support Achintya Veda, Veda Tattva, inconceivable oneness and difference, as the pure and absolute doctrine. And one can attain perfect love for the eternal absolute when he accepts this principle. So the Dasamula says that the real conception, because every school of thought has to deal with the fact of the material world in relationship to God, which appears antithetical to what God would be. So they have to have some conception, and the Vartavad is that it's just an illusion. And the Chintya Veda Veda Tattva, he says, by which one can actually attain love for God, if you accept this principle, is that the material world is God's energy. It's non-dual, it's non-different from God. I think I heard in the Bhakti Sandarbha that everything has to be non-dual, in the sense that if you believe in God, there can be nothing outside of God. Everything is inclusive within God's energies. Jiva Goswami says, there's Vishnu Tattva, which is completely non-different than God. I forgot what he said. Everything is non-different from God. But he concludes, even those things that are different from God. And I just give the example, you know, if you have the sun rays and the sun rays are also the sun, but they're not the sun. And the other example I give is the hand is the body, but it's not the body. So God has energies, just like the sun has rays. It's part of the sun. It's not different than the sun. It is the sun. During the day, the sun is in the room, but it's not in the room. So this type of conception of seeing this world as energy of God, and therefore not different than God, but differentiated energy. So he explains this. So then he goes on to explain that the philosophy of the Vedas is called Vedanta. And Vyasa called the Vedanta Sutra to give exposition to that. And from this, all acharyas extract their conclusions. And then he gives examples. Shankaracharya used Vedanta to support the Vartavad, that everything must be an illusion, because otherwise God would have been, Brahman would have been transformed. And he said that any transformation in Brahman must be false. And then he collects quotes to establish what is called Mayavad philosophy. But before that, and Babaji Maharaj is going to teach him, that Parinamvad must be popular. Parinamvad is going to explain that there are energies of God that transform without God being transformed. That this world is real. What is it? Pramam Satyam Jagat Mityam. Mayavadis, that the, you know, Brahman is real, and this world is false. But we understand that this world is real, it's just a transformation of God's energies. And this is Parinamvad. The energies, God has Shaktis, by his inconceivable potency, those Shaktis, those energies, by his inconceivable potency, are being transformed. But God himself is not transformed. And then, after Shankaracharya, then, who now has become popular, and it's basically covered atheism, Madhva reacts and has Dvaitavad, that this material world is real, it's just different from God. And with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's different, there's so many different conceptions and subtle ones. Ramanujacharya taught Vishishta Advait. Nimbarkacharya taught Dvaita Dvaitavad, and Vishnu Charm Swami taught Shuddha Advaitvad. So Madhva, Shankaracharya was opposed to Bhakti, and each of these Vaishnavacharyas has claimed that they represent Bhakti. The slight difference is, but it seemed what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was, he accepted all the Vedic conclusions with these respects, and he gave the essence of all in his doctrine, which is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. And then in answer to the question, did he accept Madhva? Well, he remained within the Sampradaya of Srimad Madhvacharya, but still Mahaprabhu only accepted the essence of his doctrine and not all the details of it. So then Vrajanath asks, what is the doctrine of Parinam Vad, transformation? Now, there's a long, long purport. I'll have to read it, and let's bear in mind. Babaji, there are two kinds of Parinamvad. Brahma Parinamvad, the doctrine of transformation of Brahman, and Tat Shakti Parinamvad, the teaching of the transformation of energy. Basically, Parinam means transformation. So real Parinamvad is Tat Shakti Parinamvad. It means the transformation of the energy. When the transformation of Brahman, that doctrine, it becomes Advaita Vedanta Mayavadi. And then he explains that those who believe in Brahman, Parinamvad, the transformation of Brahman, say that the achintya, the inconceivable, and nirvishesha, the formless Brahman, transformed itself into both living beings and the inert material world. To support this belief, they quote from the Chandogya Upanishads, Ekam Eva Eva Dvitiyam. Before the manifestation of this universe, there existed only the absolute truth, a non-dual tattva that exists. According to the Vedic mantras, Brahman is the one and only Vasta. We should accept this theory is also known as non-dualism or Advaitavad. They believe it's an illusion. They believe the transformation must be an illusion because it would be a transformation of Brahman, and therefore God is a transformation of this Brahman. And the Jiva is a transformation of the Brahman, but it's only an illusory transformation. Brahman actually never changes. Look, in this theory, the word parinam, progressive transformation, is used, but the actual process that it describes is actually vikara, destruction and deformation. Those who teach transformation of energy, shakti parinam vad, do not accept any sort of transformation in Brahman. Rather, they say that the inconceivable shakti or potency of Brahman is transformed. So, again, he's explaining more or less the basis of Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, that it's God's energy, and the energy is transformed, but God doesn't become transformed. Because if he becomes transformed, he's not eternal, he's something else. And if he keeps on transforming, it's a different entity, or that's what they say, so it must be an illusion. What we say is God has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. And that's the first two verses of the Sri Ishopanishads. The first one says, Om Purnama Da Purnamidam Purnat Purnat Udachyate Purnasya Devas. That the Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete. And even though so many units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. And then the second verse says, Tad ajati, tad naijati, tad dure, tad vantike, tad antarasya sarvasya, tad sarvasya. The Supreme Lord walks and doesn't walk. He's inside and out. He's near and far. He has inconceivable potency. According to this theory, there is a transformation, parinama, but not of Brahman. Satatvatone yata budhir ikara it yudharita. Saranandas Vedanta Sar 59. The word vikara, modification, means that something appears to be what it is not. Brahman is accepted as a vastu, basic substance, from which two separate products appear, namely the individual souls in this material world. The appearance of substances that are different in nature from the original source is known as vikara, modification. What is a vikara? It is just like something appearing to be what it's actually not. For example, milk is transformed into yogurt. Although yogurt is milk, it is called yogurt, and this yogurt is the vikara, or modification of the original substance, in this case, milk. According to Brahma, Parinalvad, the material world and the jiva are the vikara of Brahman. Without any doubt, this idea is absolutely impure for the following reasons. Again, he's talking about the Mayavadi conception that the living entity and the material world and even God are vikara. They are transformations of Brahman, and because Brahman is eternal and unchanging, those transformations must be vivarta, they must be illusion. And now Babaji Maharaj said this is a wrong idea, absolutely impure. He says, for those who put forward this theory accept the existence of only one substance named Nirvishesha Brahman. How can this Brahman be modified into a second substance if nothing exists apart from it? The theory itself does not allow for modification of Brahman. So how can it be Brahman and Maya? That's two things. So if they're talking about there's an illusion and there's God, that these transformations, the material world, the living entity is God, form of God are vikara, they're transformations, still you have two things. You have Brahman and you have illusion. You have an illusory energy. So it's not non-dual according to their own philosophy. And this is the, he's pointing out the major weakness in Advaita Vedanta. It's non-dual. You can't even name it Brahman. You can't even name it anything. Because that's a attribute. It's nirvishesha. It has no attributes. So it can't have the attribute of transforming into of an illusion that causes a transformation. Where does that exist? So this way, Babaji Maharaj is kind of defeating this Mayavad philosophy. Accepting modification of Brahman defies logic, which is why Brahman Parinamvad is not reasonable under any circumstance. However, there is no such fault in Shakti Parinamvad, because according to this philosophy, Brahman remains unaltered at all times. So there's no contradiction. Because like the sun, the rays, the touchstone, the energy, but it stays the same. We even have, Prabhupada said, examples of inconceivable potency in the material world, even how your fingernail grows. Bhagavan's inconceivable Shakti that makes the impossible possible, Gatana, Tihasi, Shakti, has an atomic particle, which is transformed at some places as the individual souls, and it also has a shadow portion, which is transformed in other places into material universe. When Brahman desired, let there be living entities, the Jiva Shakti part of the superior potency, Pada Shakti, immediately produced innumerable souls. Similarly, when Brahman desired the existence of the material world, the Maya potency, the shadow form of Parashakti, at once manifested the unfathomable, inanimate material world. Brahman accepts these changes while remaining free from change itself. Why can't the absolute reality have inconceivable potency? Why do we have to limit the absolute potency, the absolute reality, to be under the laws of nature which the absolute reality created? There's no meaning to God without accepting inconceivable potency. If you don't accept inconceivable potency in God, it's not Brahman. Because if it doesn't have inconceivable potency, then it is under laws which are greater than itself. What makes something inconceivable or chintya? That it is beyond the laws. If God is under time, he's not God. Therefore, God has aspects to all aspects of time, both past, present, and future. We cannot conceive of this because we are ruled by these laws. And therefore, we consider time absolute, but it's not absolute. God is absolute. And there are experiments in physics that modern physicists don't want to deal with, where experiences, there's some kind of experiments where they can show that the present will affect the past. I can't explain it. I'm not a physicist, but I read about these things in books by physicists that Murali Gopal, we have one brahmachari here in the Bhakti Center who has a PhD in physics, but there are experiments. Physicists can do experiments showing the relativity of time and showing how the present can influence the past. One may argue, desiring is itself a transformation, so how can this transformation occur in the desireless Brahman? So God is desiring, let there be. So Babaji Maharaj answers this. You are comparing the desire of Brahman to the desire of the jiva, and calling it a vikara modification. Now the jiva is an insignificant shakti. Whenever he desires, that desire comes from contact with another shakti. For this reason, the desire of the jiva is called vikara. However, the desire of Brahman is not in this category. The independent desire of Brahman is part of its intrinsic nature. That desire is part of God's eternal nature. So it's not a transformation in God, but rather it's the nature of God. It is one with the Shakti of Brahman, at the same time different from it. Therefore, the desire of Brahman is the sarup of Brahman, and there is no place for vikara. When Brahman desires, Shakti becomes active, and only Shakti is transformed. The subtle point is, beyond the discriminating power of the jiva's minute intelligence, it can only be understood through the testimony of the Vedas. Because our discriminatory power is based on certain laws that we see in this world, and God's beyond those laws. Now we must consider the parinam, the transformation of Shakti. The analogy of milk changing into yogurt may not be the best example to explain Shakti Parinambad. Material examples do not give a complete understanding of spiritual principles, but they can enlighten us regarding certain specific aspects. This is called Chandra Shakya Naya, I believe. It's, you can say the moon is between the branches. The moon is not between the branches, not actually a fact, but the branches give an indication to where the moon is. So same thing with analogies. They may not be exact, but they can give indications to help us understand something. So the Chintamani gem is a material object that can produce many varieties of jewels, but it is not transformed or deformed itself in any way. So here's a nice material example. So if things within this world have this kind of inconceivable potency to change things but not be changed themselves, then why can't that be there in God? Sri Bhagavan's creation of this material world should be understood as being something similar to this. As soon as Bhagavan desires, his achinta shakti, inconceivable potency, creates innumerable universes of 14 planetary systems and worlds where the jiva can live, and he himself remains absolutely unchanged. It should not be understood that this untransformed supreme is nirvishesh, formless and impersonal. On the contrary, this supreme is the great and all-encompassing substance, Brihat Vastu Brahman, the big substance of God. He is eternally Bhagavan, the master of all six opulence. If one accepts him as merely nivishesh, one cannot explain his spiritual shakti. By his achintya shakti, he exists simultaneously in both personal and impersonal forms. To suppose that he is only nivishesh is to accept only half the truth without full understanding. So the achintya shakti of God means that he is everywhere, but without defect, without the defect of being subjected to the material laws. For example, 9.4 in Bhagavad Gita says, Mayatatam idam sarvam jagata bhakti avyakta murtina avyakta unmanifest. I pervade this whole world by my whole energy, but I'm not in them. I'm not impersonal. And then the next verse says, I don't have the defect of impersonality. The next verse said, I'm everywhere, but I'm not burdened. And then I'm everywhere, but I'm neutral. I'm not responsible for what happens. Someone gets rewarded, some gets punished. Like like a judge. He praises someone, he rewards someone, but he's not responsible. It should be understood that this untransformed, okay, he is eternally Bhagavan. To suppose that he is only Nivashesh is to accept only half the truth without full understanding. His Nivashesh without qualities. His relationship with the material world is described in the Vedas using the instrumental Karanam case to signify, quote, by which the ablative Upadan case to signify from which, and the locative Adhikarana case to signify in which. So his relationship to the material world is that by which the material world is created, from which it's coming, and in which it's manifest. So he quotes from the Taittiriya Upanishads 3.1.1, Yatova imani bhutani jayanti, yena jitani jivanti, yat priyant yabisam vishanti, tadvigasava tad brahma. One should know that Brahman is he from whom all living beings are born, by whose power they remain alive, and into whom they enter at the end. He is the one about whom you should inquire. He is Brahman. In this shloka, yato va imani, the ablative case for Ishvara is used, where it is said that the living beings are manifested from him. Yena, which is the instrumental Karna case, is used when it is said that all sentient living creatures live by his power. And yat, which indicates the locative case, is used when it is said that all living beings enter into it at the end. These three symptoms show that the supreme, the absolute truth is supreme. That is his unique feature. That is why Bhagavan is always sadishesh, possessing form, qualities, and pastimes. Sri Jiva Goswami describes the Supreme Person in these words. Vridhanandamaj, actually Kastuba was telling me, made a very brilliant argument that the more fine something is, the more power it has of expression. So the fact that God is just Nivashesh Brahman without qualities limits his expression. And the human form of life is a chance for us to become God-like. And it has the full power of expression. And he gave the example of language. When language is sophisticated, like Sanskrit, Latin or Sanskrit, it can express much more. So why should we think that God is not sophisticated? Jiva Goswami describes the Supreme Person in these words, Ekam eva parama tattvam svabhavika chintya shaktya saradhaiva sarupa tadrupa by Baba Jiva Pradhan Rupena Chaturdha Batishtati Suryantar Mandalista Deja Iva Mandalatad Bahigata Tad Rashmi Tad Praticha Rupena. The absolute truth is one. His unique characteristics is that he's endowed with inconceivable potency through which he is always manifest in four ways. So the absolute truth is one. His unique characteristic is that he's endowed with inconceivable potency, which he is always manifest in four ways. Now, this is kind of important. Swarup, one, as original form. Two, Tad Rupa Vaibhav, as his his personal splendor, including his abode and his eternal associates, expansions, and avatars. Jivas as the individual spiritual soul, and Pradhan as the material energy. These four features are likened to the interior of the sun planet, the surface of the sun rays emanating from the surface, and remotely situated reflection, respectively. So he says the absolute truth is Sadishesh. It's expressive, and this is how it expresses itself. His original form, which is also Advayam Gyan, not different from him. So those things which are absolutely the same and non-different, then Tad Rupa Vaibhav, his personal, his abode, his eternal associates, even those things that are expansions from him are non-different, and even Pradhan, even though that thing which is different from him is not different from him. These examples only partially explain the absolute truth. His original form is Satchitananda, full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and his spiritual name, abode, associates, and the entire paraphernalia in his direct service are opulences that are not different from himself, Sarup Vaibhav. The countless Nityamukta and Nityabuddha jeeves are dependent, conscious atoms, Anuchit. Pradhan includes Maya Pradhan and its products of the entire gross and subtle material worlds. These four features exist eternally and simultaneously. The oneness of the Supreme Absolute is also eternal. How can these two eternal contradictions exist together? The answer is that it seems impossible to the limited intelligence of the Jiva and is only possible through Bhagavan's inconceivable energy. Anybody have a question? I'm going to have to stop here today. Anybody like to ask any questions?
Yeah, hi, Krishna Maharaj. Gail here.
Hi, Bo, Gail.
Yeah, I have a couple, actually.
yeah.
Okay, sorry, I'm not transmitting that, but it's just, oh, okay, this one is, at one point you were reading and you were saying that desires are not transformations of God. When it comes to Krishna, they're not considered transformations. When it comes to Jivas, they are considered transformations. And they're considered, they're not considered transformations of Krishna because it's his part of his nature to have desires. But I thought that is also part of the Jiva's nature to have desires. So why
desires, but desires in general may be part of the Jiva's nature, but the desires that the Jivas have are not of their necessarily of their soul. Maybe there are desires of the soul, but most of their desires are not of the soul. Their desires are of the things that from the Maya Shakti gives them desires. It's different from them. They desire this, they desire that, that can change. This, they'll have a desire one lifetime, then that desire will be gone. So they are transformations of its original self. Whether the Jiva has an original desire, that can be discussed. But for sure, what he's saying is, God has desires, and they're his desires, and they're his desires, and they're not different from him. Our desires just change.
Okay, but in our pure state, you know, in our liberated state, our desires would not be considered transformations?
No.
Okay.
No and yes. I mean, people can debate that. But the point is, for sure, the desires we have in the conditioned state are a transformation, and they're different from the desires God has, which never change. They're intrinsic within him.
Okay, information. I don't know, maybe I need to understand transformation, that word.
I'm just saying, it's a difference in him. It creates something within him or desire within him It's not part of his intrinsic nature. So it is a transformation.
Okay. All right. Something different comes in. But yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask one more?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. There was, you know, later on, after that discussion, there was a part where you were reading where you were saying how you can understand, oh, I think it was you were trying to explain, like, not analogy exactly, but you can understand one thing by pointing to something else. Anyway, in that section there, you were saying that even in the material world, something, you know, there's an example of something that can change something else without itself changing. And I was just wondering, what was the example?
An example is, you say that, you know, you point at the moon, you say the moon is between the branches. The moon is not between the branches. The branches give you a frame of reference to say the moon, and when you say it in that way, it helps you to see the moon. So in the same way, he was saying that there are material analogies to describe God that are not exact, but they can point to God and help you understand God. They're not exact analogies, because
right after, that's what I'm saying, is that right after you explained that, the purport or something said that, the commentary said that even in the material world, you know, there, you have an example of something that changes something else without changing itself.
Yes, there's a touchstone. So the touchstone is something that can turn something to gold, but it never changes itself, even though it has potency. And the example also is the sun. Yes. You know, rays come from the sun, but the sun doesn't really become less. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Gil. Anybody else have any questions? Okay, then we'll end for today. Thank you. Vanchakopa to Rabbi Shaka for sending the evening.